coming up on Thunder Pop.
And after a couple swigs of my crack to get me going, it's episode 67. Doing an earlier recording than I normally do with Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
We normally get together kind of in the afternoon. It's 10:24 our time in the a.m. I'm Stephen Presley, and I'm joined by none other than Johnny Lightfoot.
Hello, hello.
So glad to have him back in the Thunder Pop Dome. A pretty normal time for you to be, you know, up and going?
Yeah. I mean, with my job, I mean, it's regardless of the day. You know, it's between 8 and like 10, 11 p.m. I am on call, so.
Yeah, so you're used to going, but you're up by 9, but you're used to working by 10.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty normal workflow for you. Episode 67, we are senior citizens on our 67th episode. Oh, man.
It feels like just yesterday we were 18 and then 21 getting a drink, and now...
Going on spring breaks down in South Padre and, you know, getting our party on, you know, foam parties and stuff.
Yeah.
And now we're only foam is the gel that comes out of the can for our backs, for our back spasms.
Yeah, you might have to get send an AARP membership.
Yeah, but senior discounts all around, IHOP, movie theater, I love it.
Oh, yeah.
Love it. Okay, so here it is in the 67th episode. We are going to kind of talking about old-timers, nostalgia, Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
Directing Ready Player One. This is going to be our Ready Player One special edition in this episode. And then we're going to open with analyzing the trailer. We're going to break down a film that's coming up soon. What is it? None other than Solo, A Star Wars Story. Haven't had a chance to really talk to Johnny much about Solo.
Oh, yeah.
So I'd like to get some of his ideas now that we've seen some real trailers for this film. And they held out. They held back for a while on trailers for obvious reasons. I'm sure it was because of the change in directors and reshooting almost 80% of the film, and also not wanting to overlap with Last Jedi and the publicity for that going through Christmas. So it was held back for obvious reasons. I think this is going to be the closest time span between two Star Wars films ever.
Oh yeah, by far.
Yeah. Between any Star Wars, you know, media, as far as television or movies, to have them have it this close together is weird. It's kind of cool. It could be a good thing or it could be a really bad thing for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk to you about that. Let's run some theme music and let's get right into this episode. There's a lot to dive into.
I lied.
Thunder Pop, Thunder Pop, Thunder Pop, oh, Thunder Pop.
Yeah, yeah. 67. Just going to start off with analyzing the trailer. I've got the trailer pulled up. It's Solo, A Star Wars Story, and this is an extended trailer on YouTube.
Star Wars is so galactic, and Solo charismatic, makes me kinda ask.
We'll go ahead and just run some of that, and then we can kinda go into some of our thoughts about this. And then we'll get into Ready Player One, which we've just seen. Ready Player One Special Edition. All right, here goes.
I've been running scams on the street since I was 10. Kicked out of the flight.
Now, first off, this part was like music, like Beethoven. Hearing the clicks at the beginning. Did Ron Howard come up with that? That was probably whoever edited the trailer.
Yeah, it was probably whoever edited the trailer. But I mean, Ron Howard's relationship with George Lucas goes, you know, way back to American Graffiti, which had a lot of that, you know, 60s car flavor.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that's where their roots are together as friends, is that it goes back to that, to the American Graffiti time. And of course, George Lucas loves cars.
Mm-hmm.
So that played on his love for cars, yeah, and the passion for it. And then we saw it in the prequels too, with the pod races, and with Anakin. But what's cool about that is that, you know, he has a closer, real relationship than any of the other directors that have directed Star Wars films since Disney's taken over. He's the one that's had an actual long time relationship, yeah, with George Lucas.
You know, 40 years.
Yeah. So, and I felt like he should have directed the first one, or at least one of the first two, because of that very reason. I think the fans would have felt comfortable with an announcement of a Ron Howard directing a Star Wars film. I'm really surprised that the only way he actually did one is coming in to kind of in the middle of it, instead of actually getting one from the beginning.
With all of the issues that were going on with Solo, that was, I think, that's why they needed a safe choice. So they were like, let's bring in somebody who's going to be like dad, who's going to say, like, calm down, everybody.
Yeah,
I got it. Like,
that's what you needed at that point. Yeah.
Calm everybody down.
Yeah. Because it could have caused a bigger stir than it did, mm-hmm, if it had not been for the... And everybody felt like it was going to be someone like him when the guys were pulled off, the 21 Jump Street directors were pulled off of Solo. Everyone felt like, okay, they're going to probably get someone that's going to come in and really calm, mm-hmm, the waters down. And so Ron Howard was someone that was mentioned. J.J. Abrams was mentioned. So someone along the lines of that stature, Spielberg, you know, mm-hmm, someone like that. Spielberg was probably busy with Ready Player One, which is why he might not even have been a real option.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, so he has, and then George Lucas actually visited the set, even if it was just briefly, and had actually given some input on one of the Millennium Falcon scenes, from what I understand.
I've been running scams on the street since I was 10.
So here we see some of the car stuff.
Yep.
I was kicked out of the flight academy for having a mind of my own. I'm going to be a pilot. Best in the galaxy.
Hey, kid. I'm putting together a crew. You in?
That's yes.
I might be the only person who knows what you really are.
What's that?
So there it is, one of the trailers, Star Wars. Probably, from what I've seen so far, definitely looks like it could be one of the most stylish Star Wars films ever made.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of visuals, like the fashion and the costumes.
Oh, yeah. They're throwing it back, but kind of making it new and fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which was a little bit what they did with Rogue One.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think? You think this film's going to be a hit?
I mean, right now, let's see. I think it was 2 days ago, so it was very end of March of this year, that Ron Howard came out on Twitter and said, mm-hmm, it's in the can, final cut's, mm-hmm, done. And I want to say a few days before that, it was tracking to do $150 million its opening weekend, which by Star Wars standards isn't great. It would be the lowest of the new ones, the Disney ones.
Yeah.
However, compared to what people were thinking 6 months ago, where people were saying this film might crash and burn.
Yeah, it could be a disaster.
150 is very acceptable.
Yeah, especially the season, whether, because it's going to be a more crowded.
Oh, very crowded
field than because this one will come. I'm trying. I don't have the calendar right in front of me, but Infinity War comes within the same month, and Deadpool 2 comes in the, mm-hmm, same month, and there's probably something else in there that I'm actually forgetting about that's important. But I know there's three very big films all coming out the same month.
Yeah, because you'll have Rampage, then Infinity War,
mm-hmm,
then Deadpool, then Solo.
Yeah.
And then I want to say like 2 weeks after Solo, there's something else dropping in June, but I just can't think of it.
Okay, what was the order? What's the one right before Solo?
So you have
Rampage,
Infinity War. Deadpool comes out the week before.
Wow. So Deadpool 2, and of course there were some rumors around Deadpool 2 too that it didn't screen well at first, but then supposedly they changed some stuff and then they rescreened it for focus groups, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And it screened really well, like unbelievably well after they made the changes that focus groups thought they needed to make on the film. I don't think there's going to be any problems with Deadpool 2 pleasing audiences. But that's going to be tough because you're going to have Infinity War, then Deadpool 2. It's going to be tough.
Then Solo.
It's going to be tough.
Then what you have 2 weeks later is Ocean's 8.
Yeah.
Then a week after that, you have Incredibles 2.
Yeah, which is big. These are big films.
Then a week after that, you have the Jurassic World sequel.
Yeah, which is there's going to be a lot of people are really excited about that one too because of the director who's directing it. I know we've talked about that one before. Mm-hmm. That one could end up being better than the last one because of the change in director. Although I thought Colin Trevorrow did a great job. I know you were mentioning the director had background in horror cinema.
Well, and they just announced Trevorrow's coming back for Jurassic World 3.
Yeah, which is kind of like they did with Star Wars, where with J.J. Abrams coming back for the third of the trilogy to kind of finish things up, and he was still attached to it as an executive producer, this last one. So it's kind of like, the father coming back to finish up the show at the end of the night. So yeah, it'll be cool. Kind of tie it, he'll come back to tie it all together the way he wants to tie it all together. And then you could get a very pleasing, that sequel looks really good. So yeah, again, another one that's going to follow, after Solo. So it's going to be really tough. So if it does that number, that's pretty good considering how crowded a field it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not January, February.
No.
You know, in fact, some will argue that the May is now what June used to be because June used to be kind of the peak time, and now some people say it's May for the summer movie season.
Well, yeah, because used to it kicked off in May, then June it really amped up.
It's when it really ramped
then
up.
Then you had a couple in July and maybe one or two in August.
Would taper off as August, early August.
Now you're starting in like February. Like this year we had Black Panther.
Yeah.
And then we've just kept going ever since.
Yeah. And February is really the best month to release a movie if you can get February. Because you can sometimes have, if you have a really good movie like Black Panther, February is terrific because you don't have as crowded a field. And you can come out, because they had Annihilation, I think that came out within the same month, which I felt like Annihilation would have got a little more of attention had it not been released.
Black Panther.
After Black Panther, because Black Panther was just hard to miss and ignore because it was so big in so many different ways. But the thing that got missed with Annihilation was that it was a mostly female cast.
It was, yeah.
In a sci-fi property, which is also something that hasn't been done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Natalie Portman leading that film. And that film had pretty good reviews. It wasn't, I don't know if it was Black Panther level on the reviews, right, but it was still pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty up there. So that Solo, Ron Howard directing. There's been some people that weren't pleased with the casting of Han Solo. That's going to happen, though, because it's such an iconic character. They had the fan film, that they was made with on YouTube, and a lot of people like that guy a lot that did the YouTube that was it's available on YouTube to watch, but it's been shown in other circles, and I know a lot of people like that. And then there was also the guy that played the young Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
In one of his films that made I don't know if it was really an audition tape but he made a video, and he was right on the nose with his Han Solo and Harrison Ford. So a lot of fans were wanting that guy to do it. And he did look a lot like a young Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Do you think they gave him a serious look? Do you think it was more of a feeling he was doing more of an impersonation?
Yeah,
I
feel like it was more of an impersonation because the movie you're speaking about, it's something Henry.
Yeah,
that's right. And I feel like it was more of an impersonation.
Which a really
I
good
think
one.
A fantastic one.
Yeah.
I just think they really wanted to separate and do something to where, all right, let's give this kid a shot. Let's let him take the Solo mannerisms, but don't try to impersonate the voice or anything like that. Just use your own voice.
Because that could hinder a performance through a full story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's got to be some, you know, emotion there, and feeling and emotion. When you're doing a Saturday Night Live skit, a sketch that's like 30 seconds or a minute, doing an impersonation, that's not a full, you know, movie.
Right.
Two-hour movie.
And you don't want it to come off as comedic either.
Yeah, which would be the problem. Now, in Star Trek, in the Star Trek prequels, when they brought in a younger actor to do the younger Kirk and the younger McCoy and the younger Spock, they did pretty good job. I mean, they nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the tough part, is that they did such a good job with that. Then the expectations are, you know, okay, we're going to do the prequel to Solo. We want to see, you know, an equally good young Solo.
Well, and that's the thing, too, I think, is so in the J.J. Star Trek, you had the Spock and McCoy characters doing a lot of the same kind of vocal tendencies as the originals.
Yeah.
But Kirk did not. He definitely was not doing a Shatner impersonation.
Yeah.
But I think that's what you'll see in Solo as well. I think you'll see Donald Glover doing a heavy Lando impersonation. Mm-hmm. Like, I think his will be more of an impersonation, definitely, than the Solo performance.
All right, old buddy.
Yeah. Do you think it's easier to pull off because he's doing it's more of a supporting character?
Yeah. I mean, he can do a Billy Dee impersonation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a Harrison Ford impersonation can maybe start to get kind of drawn out or comedic or something like that.
It would start to get maybe a little bit too funny, which was already a threat with this film. The original directors was that they made it too comedic to begin with. So, good stuff, good stuff. All right, Ready Player One, the special edition here at episode 67. Ready Player One, your thoughts, Johnny, what do you think?
I've seen it twice.
Mm-hmm.
I really, really enjoyed it. It was old school Spielberg.
Yeah.
It was something we haven't seen from him in a while, kind of hearkening back to 80s, 90s Spielberg, just adventure movie.
When he was still doing the adventure movies, because in recent years he's spent a lot of time doing these historical pieces, like the Lincoln movie. He just did The Post? That was the movie that was nominated for an Academy Award. Doing a lot of historical pieces, and then still doing some animation, like kid stuff here and there that were more not as appealing to his older audience that grew up with him, and his E.T.s and his Close Encounters and his Jaws movies. So he hasn't been doing those types of films not as many of them for a long time.
Right.
In fact, I'm trying to remember the last film in this genre he's done previous to Ready Player One that was most recent. Would it have been Minority Report?
Minority Report or War of the Worlds?
Yeah, there was War of the Worlds. That's right. He had teamed up with the Cruise on a couple of films. And I know, Minority Report, a very pleasing, satisfying film. But then, since then he's been, and I don't know if it's age, because he is, what is he, 70? I think he's 75.
He's definitely up there. He doesn't look it.
No.
But
he doesn't carry himself that way either.
And that's the thing is, films like this, granted, you know, the majority of the film it takes place in the Oasis, so it's not a lot of having to be out, you know, sitting in the woods filming at like 3 a.m., you know, which is what he was doing back in like his E.T. Hook days you're out there at like 3-4 in the morning filming out in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Or Jaws, you're out on the ocean. It's easier for a 20 or 30 year old to do that.
Yeah, I would imagine in Jaws they were getting out in a boat with cameras, you know, following other boats that were in the movie or following the other swimmers that were in the movie. They're out in the middle of the water, and like you said, at crazy hours, 3 a.m. And I'd be just, for a 75 year old at this point, doing that sort of thing, which is why now, like in some of those movies that he still has some input on, he works more as a producer or executive producer or consultant, like in the cases of the Jurassic Park movies, where he's going to let the young guys, you know, do those films.
Yeah, they're the ones that are going to be out there in the cold or whatever, and then he can come in the next day and kind of look at what was shot and say like, yeah, that was good, that you could do something different with, that sort of thing. But he's not out there every day in the elements.
And I know even on this film, he had some debate whether he wanted to go and do it because of some of the physical requirements that would go into mm-hmm. doing it. So he had sort of, you know, and his wife, you know, that Kate Capshaw that talked him into it after she listened to the audiobook while running in the morning. She said, you got to do this. Mm-hmm. You absolutely got to do this. And so now after that, he was like, okay, she's convinced me. I got to do it. But I was thinking, well, you know, where would be one area that might have been some heavy lifting for him would have been some of those scenes where they were shooting in the stacks.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had decided that he needed to be inside the I don't know if you call it, kind of those apartments that were built from junk.
Yeah, the trailers, which are essentially the way it's described in the book, is some guy, once real estate became at a premium, started saying, okay, well, in order to do cheap real estate, we'll just start building trailers on top of trailers
mm-hmm.
and go as high as like 20 trailers high.
Mm-hmm.
Basically similar to what they're already doing in places like yeah. South America.
Yeah.
But here in America, which is something a lot of people living in America now don't think about, is 40, 50 years down the line when the population starts swelling and resources mm-hmm. start shrinking, is that something that could happen?
Something very well could happen. And it's already happening kind of in a more mild level, is even in like neighborhoods like this where I live. They have these old houses that are kind of run down, because this was the neighborhood I live in was populated mostly with old people that were like retired older people through the better part of the 90s and early 2000s. And as they started to die out and younger mm-hmm. people started to move into the neighborhood, the yuppies started to come in and take over.
Mm-hmm.
What they were doing, a lot of the real estate people, the flippers, would come in and buy these old houses that were run down, tear them down, and then because of the changes in zoning, what they are allowed to do with zoning, they could build two places on one property that used to be mm. one small house could be turned. So what they do is they build one house in the front, and then the some of these houses were real tiny, but they had huge yards where they had mm-hmm. huge backyards. So because that was more of a thing back years ago, is everybody had a nice, pretty good sized backyard.
Right.
And now the new modern developments, like in Mueller development, has real tiny yards mm-hmm. and houses are closer together. So in these yards, they're able to build two small houses and make them two stories each. And then they're able to put two houses on there and get two for the price of one for what they're selling the house for. They can sell two houses and they really jump up the price. But the next thing you know, they're going to figure out a way to do four houses on these.
Right.
These lots, because they'll make them taller, and then when the next teardown happens in 30 or 40 years or 50 years, they'll make them like little towers where they'll have, say, well, we got to do this because we're overpopulated right. now. We're going to have to put four houses stacked
but
on
the, yeah, but then you have like house three and four or on top of house one and two,
mm-hmm.
kind of like we're seeing downtown now where yeah. you're building apartments on top of stores mm-hmm. and other things.
Yeah, no, it's true, and I mean these are very nice places. I wander into the open houses sometimes. I think I'm on HGTV, mm-hmm. but they're beautiful. But they're getting there. We're in a way kind of getting to the stacks,
mm-hmm.
starting gradually little by little. So, and this film took place in
45.
So that's the not too distant future. It's kind of like a Black Mirror kind of foreseeable future where you can start to see, of course, obviously taking a different approach than Black Mirror does in its predictions mm-hmm. of the future. So this film was a huge book. Ernest Cline from mm-hmm. Austin, Texas,
yep.
that wrote this book and also co-wrote the screenplay. So he had a hand in the screenplay writing as well. At least for a long time, and I don't know for sure, I can't confirm whether he still lives in this neighborhood, but he lived in my neighborhood.
Really?
Yeah, he lived in my neighborhood. And I don't know if you've read about him, but he owned or still owns, I'm pretty sure.
A DeLorean.
A DeLorean, which are very rare. There's only...
So many that are still working.
Yeah, so many that are still working, because I don't think they've made any more since that original
mm-hmm.
Original batch. Although it's something I could see at some point, somebody with some money deciding to redo it, make some more
right.
on a limited edition. I'd love to have one of those.
Oh, yeah.
I'd love that. If, for any iconic movie car, what would be your choice?
Ooh. Gosh, because you have the DeLorean.
Mm-hmm.
They actually just recently, in the last year, I believe, did a... a recreation of Smokey's Trans Am.
Yeah, and that was pretty awesome too.
And Burt Reynolds signed each one.
I remember hearing about that. Yeah, that's awesome.
And they only did like 50 of them or something crazy like that.
And they were like, what, 100 grand?
Something like
something
that.
Something crazy.
Gosh. The DeLorean's great. The Batmobile's great, but not. It's not very, I guess, you wouldn't really use that for like an everyday car.
Yeah, running the Batmobile to the grocery store just to get a couple of things.
Yeah, because, I mean.
You definitely would drive it to every Batman premiere.
Oh, definitely.
And park it in the parking lot.
The Mach 5 from Speed Racer, which was also in Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a lot of those little Easter eggs in Ready Player One.
So like if you could recreate that, but oh gosh, it's hard to top the DeLorean for cars.
DeLorean, yeah, and it's got street cred once again for being kind of pivotal in the Ready Player One, storyline as well. So this film, you know, it was visually stunning. It had a lot going on. Sometimes maybe it was a little bit too much being crammed in at once. That kind of was, I found it a little bit distracting. But it definitely was a movie that I got lost in it. I wasn't watching my clock. I was enthralled and involved in the movie with any of the great Spielberg films I am. This was a funny clip here. This was Kevin Smith talking about when they rolled out the trailer for the first time at one of the events he was at, and he was talking about Steven Spielberg showing up.
The biggest story out of Hall H, though, is kind of the return of the king, because they played the Ready Player One trailer in Hall H, and Steven Spielberg showed up and was just like, hey, everybody, remember this? Zip. Fuck your superheroes.
Yeah, so some of the Kevin Smith Q&A and his events, I mean, the videos on YouTube are just, he's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
You ever see the one where he's talking about Die Hard, working on the Die Hard, Live Free Die Hard? It's hilarious. He's talking about working with Bruce Willis. If you get time, when you have time, and you want to see some more Kevin Smith clips, search that one. That one's worth a watch.
Oh, yeah.
His behind the scenes of working with Bruce Willis. So he's talking about Steven Spielberg showing up at an event and one of the exhibits halls, and they show up with the trailer, and he's like, hey, bitches.
Yep,
I'm back, and I still got it. Do you think this is it, though? Do you think we're going to see him doing, because at 75, this was kind of like his, encore, curtain call, but probably the last time we'll see him do this genre?
Definitely
astonishing to think about.
Definitely, like, the last time we'll see him do a sci-fi sort of thing where, like, you have these kids fighting against the man to protect what they love.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the tropes.
Yeah, that's been one of his ongoing themes.
Because he's still saying he's doing Indy 5.
That's right. I forget, but we got Indy 5, too, so that will probably be kind of the last thing for him in his genre.
And I hope... Basically, what he's trying to do with both Ready Player One and then with Indy 5 is say, okay, here's my final kid adventure sci-fi movie. Yeah. And then here's my final adventure epic with Indy 5. Mm-hmm. And I hope he puts as much effort into that as he put into this.
Yeah, really just trying to go swing for the fence on this go around. Yeah, I'm hopeful for Indy 5 because I think I've got a good feeling about it, that they're going to come up with something really good for it. So it is tough with Harrison Ford age-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they will have to address that in some real way. But and I have a pitch for it. I have a pitch for Indy 5. I'm going to make a video soon.
Oh yeah.
To talk about my pitch, and you know my pitch. You've heard my idea. I think the script's already done. I think there probably maybe some rewrites are still yet to be done. So I don't know how close my idea is to what they're going to end up doing, but I think there'll be a few things in there that they'll pick up. But I will tell you this one little nugget. I think that they need to kill off if it's a sequel and not a prequel, which I assume it's going to be a sequel to Indy 4. If it's a sequel to Indy 4, I think you have to kill off his son. And I think you have to address that early in the film. And I think that's a better way to go than just recasting the character,
mm-hmm.
which I'm not a big fan of recasting with just a different actor in situations like these series that are ongoing. So I think that would be the way to do it. Is either, I mean, you could have them just written off, but I think that would add, it would add actually a little bit of a motivation for Indy to come out of retirement and have a motivation to go back and do one more adventure.
Not to go too far off topic, but on the point of recasting,
mm-hmm.
Have you seen some of the things about Meryl Streep possibly yes. being cast as Leia?
Yeah, and that started, I think that started, it became a petition.
Because they're good friends.
Yeah, there is a connection to them. They were good friends, and Meryl Streep played,
Carrie Fisher yeah. wrote a novel and then wrote a screenplay mm-hmm. for a movie about her life.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep played basically Carrie Fisher mm-hmm. in the movie about Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, so there's that real connection there between the two of them. I think that started, I'd have to go back and confirm, but it became a petition, and there's actually a Star Wars fan group that I'm a member of on Facebook. They're very active.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of that, I realized when I posted something on their wall here recently, that as I was reading the thread, people commenting on what I posted, I think I pieced it together that it was actually somebody from that group. That mm-hmm. it started with a post on that group, and then it got a lot of traction on the group that he decided to turn it into a petition. And I think that's where it all started, but then it just blew up after that. But yeah, that's the recasting is something that Disney has said they would not. It's something they haven't.
They haven't addressed that.
They said
they would mm-hmm. never do a CG.
Yeah. Which is what gives that possibility life. On the internet is that they haven't addressed that yet.
Mm-hmm.
They said no CG, like you said, but so it does. So now some people have even started throwing other names out there. Definitely Meryl Streep has the acting pedigree to do a really strong performance.
Arguably the greatest actress
mm-hmm.
of our time.
Mm-hmm. But I just can't see that working with the fan base, especially rolling it out initially
mm-hmm.
and the reaction it would get. I just don't know if it's just going to be very polarizing to try to, for such an iconic role, to do that. I don't rule out it happening though. I think it could possibly happen
mm-hmm.
just for the fact that they've never ruled it out.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily mean it would be Meryl Streep. It could be somebody else. Mm-hmm. And there have been some other names that have kind of been rolled about. I Stevie Nicks side by side. She looks just like a lot like Carrie Fisher, especially mm-hmm. in the eyes. But I don't know if she's ever done any acting,
right?
Which is a big, big problem. I guess we could put her in some acting classes really quickly. She's acted in her music videos,
yeah.
So there's been a little bit of acting there. I don't know. We'll see. It'd be interesting. A thing back to Ready Player One. There's tons of '80s, of course, nostalgia in this film. Oh,
ton.
And a little bit of '90s too. And I love the Buckaroo Banzai. I want to get the Buckaroo Banzai suit.
Oh yeah!
After seeing this film, that was a great. And there's been a lot of talk about Buckaroo Banzai again. Like it's kind of coming back into people's consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's even been talk about trying to reboot it at some point. So it'll be interesting to see if that ever happens, because it's one of the things that's sort of. It's a cult classic, has a cult following, but it's not something that everybody has heard of,
right?
Like Indiana Jones or E.T. or any of this other. So it's kind of something, if it's on your radar, that's one thing. But even Blade Runner, that everybody knew, had mm-hmm. either heard of Blade Runner, even if they had not seen it. But I don't know if everybody has heard of Buckaroo Banzai.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
President's on line one calling about, is everything okay with the alien spacecraft and planet 10, or should he just go ahead and destroy Russia?
Tell him yes on one and no on two.
Mm-hmm.
Which was yes, Destroy Russia or number two?
So any other thoughts on Ready Player One?
My first thought is I wish I hadn't listened to the Audible, mm-hmm. like, right, because literally for the month leading up to the movie, because I had been waiting, because I own the book, and I didn't read it because I was holding out, but then as I got more and more excited for the movie, mm-hmm. I started listening to the Audible.
Yeah.
And it was so good. And then I watched the movie the first time, and I was like, well, that was really fun, but it wasn't like the book. And then I watched the second time, and mm-hmm. I was like, it didn't need to be. The heart of the book was there, and I know Ernest Cline helped write the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about it. There's no way you would have been able to make a, like, 100% faithful adaptation of that book. Mm-hmm. So I give the book an A, and I give the movie an A. They're just, I've come to some things changed. Yeah, I come to peace that they're two different things with the same, they have the same, like, the central idea mm-hmm. is the same.
Yeah.
It's just the way things happen are different.
Yeah, and some people liked the changes. I know some people did not like the changes. Some people thought Spielberg actually fixed some things that
The book helped. Is very... When I was telling people about some of the differences, they were like, what are you talking about? I was like, is very detailed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, this is... Like, that book, you would have to turn it into, like, a three season. Like, each mm-hmm. season, like, the first season's the Copper Key, the second season's the Jade, yeah. and then the last one, the Crystal. That's how detailed and intricate everything is.
Yeah, so it was to make it into a, what was it, 2 hour and 19-minute film? Something like that, that they absolutely had to figure out a way mm-hmm. to make that condensed, but not, you know, make it clunky in the process,
yep.
which they did. They did a very good job.
Very, very good.
And Spielberg's the guy to do that. He's really good at taking that sort of thing and simplifying it down, I guess, is the way to say it, for a 2 hour film.
And the funny thing, one of my favorite things about the movie wasn't even mentioned in the book,
mm-hmm.
Which is, I don't know if we're doing spoilers.
Oh, no, this is spoiler enthralled.
The yeah. piece with The Shining. All the stuff with The Shining mm-hmm. in the middle of the movie, I absolutely ate it up.
Yeah, that was. I know you being a big fan of that genre, but yeah, it was just very enjoyable, especially with the character who had not seen The Shining.
Exactly.
And them being the one that gets to see the film for the first time, but actually being in the film
yeah.
as they're seeing
it. I loved it. And the only thing I would say the book did a lot better than the yeah. film
mm-hmm.
would be the villain.
Yeah.
Because I love Ben Mendelsohn. Yeah. He's a fantastic actor.
Yeah. Plays great. Rogue One.
Plays a great villain.
Yeah.
But in the book, you fear that character.
Mm.
You're like if I don't play on his terms, like he will do everything he can to end you or end your family mm-hmm. or, and like, I will get as much dirt and information on you as possible.
Well, yeah.
And I will have contingency plans to where if my first plan doesn't go through, I'm going to find a way to exploit you and make
super
your life
calculating.
Yeah. Where in this one, he was a Spielberg villain. He was somebody for the kids to go like,
yeah.
And it was funny. You know, when he had
made
the
more
earpiece.
Bumbling to start, even a little bit bumbling and funny.
Yeah, when like Wade was quizzing him and he had the little earpiece where yeah. people were feeding him lines
mm-hmm.
And he was trying to seem like he was cool. Like,
yeah.
it was
yeah.
funny. It was yeah. really funny. But it wasn't ominous. He wasn't evil. But
mm-hmm.
in any Spielberg adventure film, he doesn't really have like evil villains.
Yeah.
But in the book, the villain is evil. He's an evil man.
Yeah, you like that part. You like that better about mm-hmm. the book.
I like the villain. It's just I liked the menacing evil. You don't know what he's going to do. Whereas yeah. this one, he's just kind of like, oh, shucks, those kids
yeah.
got me again.
Yeah, he was softened for a younger audience.
And then at the end, mm-hmm. he got, you know, when he opened up the van and mm-hmm. Wade had the egg and he saw Wade crying, he was just kind of like, ah, yeah, I lost.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that that's the grandpa in Spielberg, that maybe a younger director would have realized that younger audience could handle the more ominous villain and that they're, and especially in today's film going experience?
I think yes, Because back in those days, you could, like, even in Hook, mm-hmm. Captain Hook wasn't a terrible, like, he wasn't, you didn't feel like he was really super evil. Like, you mm-hmm. kind of felt for him a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think that's a Spielberg thing where, like, this guy, the way he came up was he literally got the create, he was his coffee boy. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of feel yeah. kind of sorry for him. Like, and he's, like, telling the creator all these ideas he has, and James Halliday is just kind of brushing him off and is like, that's a good latte. And mm-hmm. and so you think that, you know, maybe there was a time when he was younger that he did really care about the Oasis.
Yeah.
And just as he got older, then he just started caring about the money mm-hmm. and
the power.
The power.
Mm-hmm. Control. And they had the actor there that could have played that way.
Oh, yeah, because that's what he was in Rogue One.
He's very capable. Oh, yeah, he's very capable of doing that. So if you directed him in that, taken him in that direction, he would have been more than able to handle it.
Granted, when I think of this, I think Spielberg wanted to make this a film where even kids who maybe don't know all the references, mm-hmm. That they can enjoy. Because, I mean, that's what yeah. he started out doing was PG adventure movies.
Yeah.
So they would... He made movies that everybody from like age 7 to age 70 could mm-hmm. watch and enjoy. And you couldn't really have like a Hans Gruber,
yeah,
you know, in those kind of films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what's true. There's plenty here to, even if you didn't grow up in the 80s, if you're the younger audience, there's plenty here to still, you know, sink your teeth into mm-hmm. for this film because of the way Spielberg took the approach and the direction. Do you think there's going to be a real big comeback of some of the stuff that was in this film with a younger audience because the stuff that they were introduced to possibly for the first time?
I mean, I would say over the last several years, we've seen an 80s, 90s nostalgia yeah. kind yeah. of come back with, I mean,
it's
I've
back
seen
anyway.
At like stores in the mall, you'll see like Masters of the Universe and Ninja Turtle t-shirts mm-hmm. and Power Rangers and all this stuff that's, you know, really old school, but now it's cool
yeah.
again. So even like, I guess the cool kids mm-hmm. wear like the old school nerdy stuff. So,
you know, I'll be DJing and I'll notice a trend. And I DJ parties and special events. And so I'll notice trends like where a certain song will come back all of a sudden from the 80s. And it's just out of the blue with a pretty young audience that wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. born yet when that music was out. And for a long time, it was Don't Stop Believin' by Journey. That was mm-hmm. everywhere. Every party I DJ'd, people would want modern music. They'd want, you know, Kanye West and Lil Wayne and Beyonce. But then, and even stuff newer than that, you know, it goes into, you know, Wiz Khalifa and Bruno Mars and stuff like that. But then they wanted Journey. Mm-hmm. So there's always that random, and then, you know, lately it's been, you know, stuff from Dirty Dancing mm-hmm. is back. So sometimes it's a re-release of a film or something that was being run in heavy rotation on cable TV.
Stranger Things.
So a song is used in a new show like Stranger Things or Ready Player One. A song or a reference is used in a new show or movie that's popular with a younger audience. And then that brings something back mm-hmm. to the forefront. And it's sometimes it's one thing, but it keeps coming back. Like Journey was coming back to every week. People would want Journey. And then lately it's been Dirty Dancing. Everybody's been wanting Dirty Dancing.
Well, I would say even since Ready Player One, just the other day, I played Van Halen's 1984 uh-huh. at work.
Yeah.
And a couple people I know who are, they're in their early 20s. Mm-hmm. So they weren't, you know, they didn't grow up in the Van Halen era.
No, not even on the tail end of the Van Halen era.
But when Jump came on.
Yeah, they knew it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that song is at the beginning of the film. So I think there's going to be a revival of Jump with kids mm-hmm. wanting to hear Jump.
Just that synthesizer mm-hmm. and everything. So it's really neat because as somebody who was a kid in those days, mm-hmm. now I can be like my parents and my grandparents were, you know, 20 years ago where they were mm-hmm. like, yeah, I remember in my day that was mm-hmm. that was a thing.
Yeah, it's everything old is new again for sure. And you know, even at the end of the movie, at the closing of the credits, they have You Make My Dreams Come True by Hall & Oates, and that mm-hmm. song has been back now for a while.
Oh,
in
yeah.
In terms of its popularity when I DJ parties, that's probably the most popular of the last year. It's probably been the most popular song for introductions at weddings, like when people walk out, and do their introductions, it's been that song. Not anything new or that's just come out. It's been that particular Hall & Oates song. So that's been around for, you know, kind of back for a little bit. We saw some other stuff. We saw, there's a Prince song is played in the background at the garage, I think, when they're working on the motorcycle in the mm-hmm. garage in Ready Player One. And I'm wondering, would that Prince song had made it into this movie if Prince had still been alive? I have to question that. Maybe it wouldn't have, because he was so guarded against using his songs in certain things, and mm-hmm. people are always asking him to use songs in movies and shows and stuff, and he would shoot it down all the time. And now it's being run by his estate,
right?
Which is a little bit kind of gray area of who exactly is in charge, like from his family. Mm-hmm. So I think there's like a bank that was appointed to oversee the estate.
And how much money are you going to pay for these rights?
Yeah, exactly. So I wonder, now you're starting, I knew once that happened, I was like, you're going to start seeing Prince in places you did not see Prince. And some people will question whether that was a good business decision on his part to...
Well, he could have made a lot more money.
Yeah, he could have made a lot more money. And the fact that you have some of these other older artists like Michael Jackson, we're talking about Journey and Hall & Oates, that had built an audience with a younger audience mm-hmm. because of their availability to see them on YouTube and on Vivo, and being able to find them in movies and television shows that they were watching now, mm-hmm. where Prince kind of didn't get that same status with the younger audience because he wasn't putting his songs in these new properties.
Because after the Michael Keaton Batman mm-hmm. and Purple Rain,
yeah,
I have trouble thinking of him being in any movie over the last 20 years.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's oversaturation where a song is, like, I think there's the James Brown song, I Feel Good, has been used in more movies and television shows than any song ever. But it's also like, if you hear it in another movie, you're like, oh no, not this song again in another movie. I think, okay, we've used that song up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And great song, but we've used it up. All right. Another thing that's kind of been used up is coming up here in a minute. Agree or disagree. For your asses.
Uh-oh.
Thunderpop was not recorded in front of a studio or audience.
And we're back with Johnny Lightfoot for episode 67. We're getting old and nostalgic like Steven Spielberg, so appropriate. It's agree or disagree. Are you ready, Mr. Johnny Lightfoot?
I am ready.
Creed director Ryan Coogler isn't returning to direct Creed this time around. It's up-and-comer Stephen Caple Jr. at the helm. Do you agree that Creed 2 will prove to be a disappointment since Coogler will not be directing and writing the sequel? It's actually Sylvester Stallone that wrote the script this time.
I don't think it'll be a disappointment, but I don't know if it's going to be able to capture that magic of the first one, because that mm-hmm. first one was like the grand return to Rocky, even though it wasn't really about Rocky.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be kind of tough because Coogler is like, he's like magic in a bottle right now. Like everything he touches turns to gold. But I think it'll, Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone, I think it's got enough returning to where it's not like we're going to get Rocky 5,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, with Tommy Gunn once again. Well, this one's also going to play a lot more on nostalgia with the return of Ivan Drago.
Right.
Drago's son,
mm-hmm.
going to fight.
And I mean, I loved that character, and I'm interested to see like where that went and then how this is going to form some mm-hmm. new rivalry now that there is no Soviet Union. And mm-hmm. like, how's it going
to... Yeah, how that will affect... Now Stephen Caple Jr., went to film school with Ryan Coogler, and that he was hand-selected by Coogler to direct this film.
I have even more faith then.
So it'll be interesting. And he's been a, you know, much buzzed about up-and-comer, so mm-hmm. it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with. All right, another reboot and sequel. Roseanne, number two. Roseanne's ratings, riches, keep climbing. The new totals for her March 27th premiere have the ABC comedy totaling 25 million viewers and a massive 7.3 rating among adults 18 to 49. That's the coveted demographic for television, 18 to 49, and really for everything. Do you agree that the success of Roseanne has all but guaranteed we are getting a slew of more TV and movie revivals in the next few years? I'm talking about things that maybe wouldn't even have happened, but because Roseanne was such a blockbuster, things are getting green lit just on the back of Roseanne.
I agree. And I was actually thinking about this the other day when I saw somebody on another movie channel pose the question of why are these remake television shows being so successful? Mm-hmm. Why aren't we getting more new ideas?
Original
and things
stuff,
like that?
Yeah.
And the idea came to my head. We have more original programming in today's society than we've ever had in the history of television.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you have so many streaming platforms who all put out their own shows.
Yeah.
You have all these different networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, CW. Then you have the cable channels like FX, AMC. Then you have the premium channels like Stars, HBO. Netflix puts out all their own stuff. Amazon, you know, there's so much stuff out there that if I wanted to watch everything, or if I tried to watch everything that I want to watch, there's not enough hours in the day. And, you know, for a lot of people now, with the ability to consume what you want to consume when you want to consume it, basically you're going to have each little vector of entertainment's going to have an audience somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like back in the days where like the only things that got great ratings were the stuff that played between like 7 and 8 p.m. on weeknights.
Mm-hmm.
There's just more opportunity to get your audience. So I think you're going to see plenty of remakes and you're going to see plenty of new stuff.
They're just really good, like new stuff. That's really, you know, fascinating and original.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As well as, you know, like the Black Mirrors of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And a plethora of great stuff on streaming platforms that are original content, new stuff. But yeah, the things I could see happening. Well, I mean, Bill and Ted's has been in a rumor
forever.
And now that looks like that's really going to happen. And I think that's something that's going to happen because of stuff like Roseanne being such a success.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, you know, this probably could do well. This probably could get a great opening week at the box office. I think there's going to be some, like, I could see a Cheers. I could see Quantum Leap. I could see Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Those are some TV properties that I think that could possibly be rebooted and do quite well with their audiences.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, it was reported late last year that Woody Harrelson, also from Han Solo film, was in talks to join the cast of Sony's Venom movie. Now a new report has surfaced claiming that Woody Harrelson is actually playing Carnage in Venom. And this is a report from MovieWeb. Do you agree with this news? Do you agree with this news? It's possible that we may be getting Woody overkill as of late. Do you agree that Woody has become the new Sam Jackson, Kevin Hart, Gene Hackman, make a movie of a month guy? Do you agree or disagree?
Gosh. Had he not done so well in Three Billboards?
Yeah.
And then, I don't know why I'm having trouble thinking of the show he did with Matthew McConaughey.
True Detective.
True Detective, the first season.
Big fan of that.
Did an amazing job on that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like he's playing the same character in every movie, which I feel like Kevin Hart kind of does.
He's not turning out some crap.
Mm-hmm. So until he starts pumping out garbage.
Yeah, like Michael Keaton doing the Snowman movie from years ago, which I never understood.
Yeah, until he like pumps out like three just garbage dumpster fires in a row, then I'll say, okay, Woody, you need to take a step back and like recalibrate. You need to talk to your agent.
Get back to Austin and hit where he spent like the endless summer in Austin just hanging out at Barton Springs pool.
Like you need to rethink the jobs you're taking.
Yeah.
So no, not until they start being bad.
Yeah. Yeah, and he would hear for a long time. He would hang out. He's like one of those actors that would just hang out in Austin all the time, like mm-hmm. Bill Murray. And he was always seen at Barton Springs Pool. I think he liked the weed.
Yeah, I think so.
I think he likes the weed. He was on doing a raw food diet. Mm-hmm. So he showed up at a lot. I've seen him at Whole Foods. I saw him at Whole Foods with Owen Wilson a few times. And I think they were doing, they did a voice for a cartoon together. And I think they may have been working on that project at the time that they were spotted together here in Austin. But Bill Murray still showing up in Austin all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And random sightings in Austin. And he's actually got, Bill Murray actually has a 1-800 number that if you want to pitch your idea, because he doesn't have an agent. Mm. He just has a 1-800 number. And you supposedly, if you can get his 800 number, you can call it and pitch your idea for a film to him, and then he'll get back to you if he's interested. And that's how he, and then he checks his messages, and that's how he gets his next role. And big studios, they probably have another way to get their script to him, but it's directly to him since he doesn't use an agent. He's his own agent. He does have a lawyer, though.
Right.
He's got a lawyer, but that helps him, I guess, probably finalize these deals. And figure out if they're going to be a good deal for him or not. But yeah, he doesn't use an agent. And now also getting back to, I was meant to mention this, but Ernie Cline, he's a very recognizable guy. You can't miss him. Like, once you've seen his photos somewhere, you've seen him in a, because he was in the documentary, the video game documentary that I know was going around for a while. And he's been involved in other projects over the years. So even before Ready Player One, he was someone that, you know, was known of. I'd see him also at the local market a few years ago, and I always know he's there because you see the DeLorean in the parking lot,
right?
And then you would go inside and you see his big framed glasses, and it was like, oh yeah, that's Ernest Cline. I've never approached him, though, because I'm sort of one of those people, like, just to walk up on someone at the grocery store feels a little awkward, because I don't know if it's going to be you gotta have something really to say to him, otherwise it just feels a little kind of weird,
yeah,
just to go up and bug him. So, you know, it was at a some kind of film festival,
right?
And they're doing a Q&A, and then, you know, you can go up and talk to him afterwards, but just to bum rush him. But I will email someone, or I will try to contact him through channels that are, you know, available to send a correspondence to him, snail mail, email. I'll phone their office. So I did try to email him to see if I could, because, hey, we live in the same neighborhood. Let's get together sometime and have a coffee. You know, that'll do. I may not ever get a response, but it's hard to get a hold of him on the internet. He's on the internet, but it's hard to get a hold of him on the internet because he just doesn't do a standard email contact on his Facebook. Like, there's not a way to message him through his Facebook. He keeps that part turned off. And then he does have a website. You'll go to his website, and he doesn't have, like, an email. You know, because I thought, okay, let's have him on the podcast. Let's have him, even if it's on a phone call.
Right.
Can I get him? I say, we live in the same hood. Let's, you want to call in. We'll ask you some questions that, you know, you're not getting asked by everybody else. We'll try to mine for some original stuff. But anyway, I'm still haven't given up on that because I recently found someone, their whole job is you hire them and then they get a hold of anybody you want them to get a hold of. That's their whole, you can contract them. Just tell them who you're trying to get a hold of, and they'll find out where and how. They do the research for you. And it's not bad. It's not expensive to hire them for an hour to do, or a couple hours to do research like that. So I may do, if I get desperate, I may do something like that. Otherwise, if I see him at Arlen's Market, I won't approach him, but I will slip a note on his DeLorean.
Right.
That I will do. It's a little bit less creepy not to slip a note on someone's car.
Thanks for leaving your curtains open, just enough for me to peek through. I was hiding in the dark behind a tree in your front yard, and you didn't have a clue. Packed my cooler with a snack, got myself all dressed in black, so I could secretly watch you. I'm stalking you.
Johnny Lightfoot, I want to thank you for joining me for episode 67. And now it's time for Thoughts and Advice. And here's my thought and advice for you. Today, my thought and advice for you fools out there is rest your mind. A great one once said, free your mind and the rest will follow. They also went on later to say that you are never gonna get it. Not gonna get it. But, needless to say, when they said free your mind, they really meant rest your mind. There's a lot going on in the news today. There's a lot of craziness, and I don't have to get into all the cray-cray that's out there. The cray-cray is all over your face, all over the walls, all over the floor, and it's dancing right in front of you, doing the little Cupid shuffle back and forth, to the left, to the right. The craziness is line dancing on your face. But here's the thing. You need to rest your mind to get away from all the craziness in the world. It's a lot of stress to your system. So whether you're a Zen guru that likes to do meditation, or whether you prefer diddling with yourself to some YouPorn, whatever your version of resting your mind is, then get out there and do it. I hate to get all Dr. Oz on you and shit, but or Dr. Phil or Dr. Drew, any of those TV doctors, Drew Scott from the Property Brothers, any of those Drews, whatever. I hate to do it, but I'm doing it because we need to have someone to step up to the plate and say, rest your mind. And yes, it still holds true that you are never going to get it. Get it. Never get it. Never going to get it. Never get it. Never going to get it. Get it. There you go. Rest your mind. You get it? There. There's my thought and my advice for you fools out there in Thunderpop land. And there you go. Thoughts and advice, Johnny Lightfoot.
Good stuff, good stuff.
And I want to thank you for joining us for episode 67, our Ready Player One special edition.
It's a good time.
Have to have you come back maybe right before Solo. Solo's going to be coming out soon. Yeah. And do some more talk on Solo. We had some pretty interesting stuff we dived into at the beginning of the show on that. Everyone have a great day, hour, month, second, millisecond. Peace.
Later.
And Thunderpop is a Hit the Bricks production.